This is Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 a.m.
I've heard two great speeches, I'm going to say, in the last 30 years. I can't even think of any two greater speeches. Now, one was by Elizabeth Cave. I'm going to have her on. It was a Let Kids Be Kids presentation. And she spoke on the psychology of identity disruption. And it wasn't her oratory, but it was the information that was absolutely so powerful. It was just stuck in my mind, and I went and heard it again. And the other great speech that I heard was at Voices for Freedom, and it was Aaron McLaughlin. And I only got to hear it once. And I'd love to hear it again and again and again because it was so powerful. And we've got Aaron with us. He's a coach. He's a celebrant. Good morning, Aaron.
Hey, Rodney. So good to be here, mate. So good to see your smiling face.
Oh, well, you're such a positive guy, right?
I have my moments. Only human.
Your speech at Voices for Freedom moved me extremely deeply.
How so?
Very, very powerful. Your positivity, because I can be a bit Eeyore-ish, if you know what I mean. And what you had been through, and then your understanding of how the mind works, just spoke to me. Can you quickly, I know it's such a great story, but we're going to talk about, I've got it here, we're going to be talking about curiosity and why it's important. Should we just do that and your life story will come out of that?
I love that way of going. Actually, it resonates really well with me.
If we talk it like that, about curiosity.
Yeah, and tell me, that.
Before we get into it too much, Aaron, I know you've got a web page. What is it for listeners?
Aaron, AARONM. For McLaughlin, aaronm.co.nz.
aaronm.co.nz, because people might want to be clicking on it if they're sitting on a computer. Well, what's curiosity?
Oh, I love that question. I was lying awake all night last night because we've had some exciting news. And I was thinking about curiosity. I was thinking about this talk, and I was reminded I learned transcendental meditation back when I was in my early 20s. My dad dragged me along because I was very sick. I think I mentioned this at that talk
yes,
I gave.
Yes, indeed.
And
poisoned by pesticides.
Paraquat, one of the worst, yeah. They rename it and resell it, make it stronger and resell it as something else. It's the quat you look out. You look out for the quat. It's got the quat! Anyway, so I learned this thing called TM, and it partly saved my life, I think, because it gave me what is in some ways known as the inward stroke. And it's kind of like, you know, our whole life is this externalized reality. We look out into the world and we look out and we see all this stuff going on and we go, wow, you know, and I've got to get successful here. And then there's this drama over here. And, you know, and we have this kind of force within us, and we now know, actually it's really quite interesting, I'll skip a little bit, but we now know from Dr. Nell's book in The Indoctrinated Brain, which came out earlier this year, you know, the really fascinating connection into the hippocampus and this thing called curiosity. And I was learning this TM, and I just transcended literally straight away. I'd never had an experience except when sitting in the at the ocean as a child, around 7 years old, South Dunedin, St. Clair Beach. There was this beach called Second Beach, but it had this massive wall, and it was like 6 feet tall, and it had do not enter, and we just jumped over it and went all the way around. And we'd sat on the rocks, this mate of mine and I, Michael, and we'd sit and literally become mesmerized by the ocean and this. You know, the long bull kelp, you know, these tendrils yes. of kelp. Yes. And they might be 20, 30 feet long. And how they just, you know, it doesn't matter what the ocean throws at this kelp. It just seems to, it giggles, it laughs back and just snaps and curls. And I just remember kind of sitting there on this rock where I should never have been, overlooking this, you know, 20-foot drop into this rocky kind of basin of moving kelp, and just being mesmerized. And I think there's this insatiable curiosity that drives us. And, you know, I was lying awake last night and I was thinking, well, how do I describe that when I think about it? And, you know, there's this thing called the Vedic books, and they're like volumes of book that kind of define life, which is where a lot of meditation practices, yoga and all these things come out of, Rodney. And it's really interesting because there's, and there'll probably be scholars out there who are going to go, yeah, you haven't got that quite right, and I'm good with that. So I'm going to give my kind of perception of what I've learned through this. So this is an extremely large book called the Veda and the Vedic texts. And the first book, the first syllable is Ak. And Ak describes this very one thing. And it is where consciousness is kind of just hanging, you know, like it's just hanging out in the universe as it does, you know. And then it suddenly comes to this point where, well, it wants to know if there's anything else. So it looks out. Well, because it's consciousness and that's all there's nothing out there. And so it goes out and then it goes, well, there's nothing here, and it turns back. And in that moment, it sees itself. And in that moment, it becomes so insatiably curious. And that's it comes back, goes, ah, and it comes back to itself. It's the most gorgeous thing. And it's almost like this curiosity is almost like the very first fundamental bedrock kind of inspirational resonance of existence. So, and the cool thing about the Vedic text is the first sentence that follows that first syllable, the first sentence, I believe, and I've heard, describes that. And then the first paragraph describes the first sentence. And then the first book, or the first whole verse, which is pages long, describes the first paragraph. And it goes on and on and on and on. And, yeah, it's the most gorgeous thing. And then it gets into the extraordinary aspect of this curious moment basically expands into this thing we call creation. And then creation becomes so engaging that we have this thing where we become externally referenced. We become totally engaged in the external realm, and we forget that the first impulse was the coming out and coming back in, the inward stroke. And so coming back to curiosity, that's what happened to me when I learned transcendental meditation. Remember Alan Hills, who taught me back in Green Lane, back when I was 24, and I was just sitting there, and he did this thing, which was, they won't say it, but there's partly hypnotic trance inductions in there and all sorts of stuff, but beautifully done. And I just, for the first time in my life, I transcended out of pain, out of negative internal dialogue, and I suddenly had that moment, you know, where I connected so deeply with something else, you know. And then from that point on, I've been just exploring that and going, well, what is this force? And I just keep coming back to where there's this insatiable curiosity. It's going, wow, look over there. What's that? What's that? And Dr. Nels has found in his exploration of the hippocampus in The Indoctrinated Brain, a fantastic book, hard read, but a great book, is that the hippocampus is driven and the immune system is driven and our capacity to make, our personality is driven. Our ability to lay down memories is driven by this curiosity. It's phenomenal. It's just like, I get excited by it. It's just so cool. It's so simple, you know.
I got told to read a book called The Secret.
Yes. Yep.
And, here we go. And I started reading it. I'm halfway through. And it's a similar thing, and you realize that there's all these similar things. And so the secret is that beyond the body and the mind is awareness, and which you would call curiosity, I think. Is it similar?
Well, yes and no. I guess, if you don't mind.
I'd love you to, because I just halfway through, and I'd love to hear you.
Well, The Secret's a really interesting kind of manual to, and they made a little movie about it. It was an Australian guy. They fact-checked it, talked, you know, said that she was full of rubbish, and there was all sorts of horrible stuff actually happened after that book and movie. But fundamentally, the essence of what she was getting at was something that came from Bhakti Shewana, I think, which was about creative visualization. And so the essence of it is that fundamentally, and this is why I rang you 2 weeks ago, is that what we put our attention on has the capacity to become real.
Yes.
So what we put our, yes. So if I put my attention on hellfire and brimstone, you know, at some point I'm going to start manifesting and it's going to start influencing my life. If I have an act of trauma, for example, there's a part of me that's really curious about that act of trauma. The reason being, kind of outside of what we normally are taught to believe, the reason for that curiosity is because it actually wants to resolve it. You know, I've done enough kind of experience reading. I've worked for, I've done deep hypnosis with clients. I've done all sorts of really interesting work with people. And I cannot find in anyone I've ever worked with a desire for negative intention. Like there's a sense that we're wired for, we're wired for emergent consciousness. We're wired to explore. I give you a reason. You said I do sovereign work, and I was, it's very quickly, but I was, perfect example. I mean, it was a tragedy of this young man who died very young in an accident. And I was a celebrant, and as often happens, you know, I'm in my suit and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And we you know, there's about 130 odd people there. And someone invariably hands me something to read that I just don't have time to check. You know, I just don't have time because I'm walking up saying, listen, I can't do this. I just can't read this. So could you read it for me? So not a problem. So I fit it in. So I get to this point and I'm reading this story, and it's about this young man in a trip overseas where he goes to this, he was known as very gullible. So he goes to this, in Australia, it's sort of like a zoo, and they come across this bird, and this young man who's passed away, he says to his father, what bird is that, Dad? And the father goes, it's the shikaka bird. Well, the shikaka bird doesn't exist, but the shikaka bat exists in the Pet Detective movie with Jim Carrey, which I've watched a number of times because I just, there's something ridiculously funny about that movie, and I fall apart. I just fall apart. At the funeral, I'm crying, I'm standing there, and I had to grab water. And everyone suddenly goes, what? And then everyone just bursts into laughter. Like, everyone just, because. And what I'm getting at is everyone was heavy. Everyone was sad. Everyone, and rightly so, everyone was grieving. And then suddenly there's this madness. And everyone knew about the shikaka bird because everyone that knew this boy knew about this thing. But the kid forgot in that time. And suddenly, bam, everyone just suddenly realized the joke or realized the humor in it. And in an instant, everyone just transformed into lightness and blossoming and connection with the true nature of this kid. You know, and I find that such a beautiful metaphor for kind of how we're designed. I mean, if you look at the last 4 years, if you even look at the last years since 9/11 even, we have been kind of on this treadmill of being told to dislike each other, to fear each other, to even fear people, women with braids, you know, hate the family unit, all these different things, you know. And it's like, but you keep repeating those stories.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
I think it was Sigma War, you know, a lie told repeatedly enough will become everyone's truth. And it's that mass formation of repeating that lie, and it engages the curiosity because the curiosity is going, what's that about? How? What does that mean? But if it's repeated often and we've suspended that disbelief, you know, then we won't challenge it. We'll just take it on board.
So how do you – well, let me ask a couple of questions first.
Yeah, sure.
So we have a brain, a mind. We have a body, But there's something else to us, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
There's something we don't understand. And, I mean, I think the secret's getting at it. You're deeper in it. But what you're unlocking isn't just a material thing. There's something in us, like a spirit, a soul. There's who we are, and it's not this material thing.
You know, there's a really interesting... I was sitting down with a dear friend, Neil, in Christchurch just for lunch the other day, and he says, do you want to hear something really wild? And now this guy, he's on Substack, Neil Wooten, and he just does the most amazing articles. He's just been literally reading every single piece of research about DNA, about RNA, about COVID, about spikes, about everything. And, he said, and we have talks once a month. We sit down for lunch. And he said, do you want to hear something really amazing? I said, sure. And he said, well, you know how you've got neurons? And I said, yeah, we got. And I said, you know, we got trillions. He said, yeah, we've got trillions. So did you know that, and I can't remember the specifics of the names he gave me. Please forgive me. But send me an email and I'll get the research to you if you're interested. But the fundamental thing was, he said, do you know in one neuron, they found these tiny little pipes. And within each of those pipes, and there's millions if not trillions of them in each neuron. And then inside each one of those pipes is a trillion neurons. And wow. And it's like, so we're running trillion to the trillion to the trillion. So what he's saying is, at that organic level, you're now tapping into what Maharishi in the University of Iowa, which Guy Hatchard did his training at, they talk about this unified field theory of consciousness, which is where kind of like material fact or materialism or organic materialism meets consciousness, meets transcendence. And that's that God principle, if you like, that yes. There's a unifying kind of intelligence. Well, they kind of get into the point where they're going, well, I think that's it, you know, because it's so,
wow.
You know, you're talking about nanoparticulates. You talk about nanoparticulates, Rodney. This goes way smaller. Like nanoparticulates are like the sun. And what they're talking about in this research is like our moon, you know. So it's like, and my view on this, which is really interesting, it's just something I come with. I dream these weird ideas. So I'll throw this one out there. We never design a thing without first being at the place where we can undesign the thing that we designed. So what I mean is, so if it's true that there are these nanoparticulates flying around, blah, 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 and they're in our blood and blah, 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 here's what we've just learned. We've learned that there's something even smaller, infinitesimally smaller, that is an aspect of our consciousness.
Yes.
So here's the thing. Imagine if I just use my creative visualization, or I use my intentionality, and I go, well, actually, I'm going to talk to that deeper part of me. Goodness knows how, but I'm just going to intentionalize that, and I'm going to ask it to just deal to the nanos. I'm just going to ask it, because if it's fundamentally smaller and more minute, it's actually more powerful, because we know that that's the nature of. I mean, the atom bomb was proven. If you know, the smaller you go and you bang those suckers together at high speed, you create this incredible force. You know, going on, but I just, you know, I'm rabbit holing.
It's extraordinary, though, isn't it? Because everything that we've looked at is deeper and deeper and deeper and more complex than we ever imagined. So we thought with materials, we got down to the atom, and then we got down to subatomic particles, and then we get down to waves, and till it actually, you can't begin to understand it because it becomes so weird. And you look at the universe and you thought there's a solar system. Oh, yeah, I get that, and the sun. And, oh, we go around the sun. Oh, wow. And then you realize that there are multiple galaxies and no end to it. And then you discover about time and you can't begin to get at it. And you think of, we thought when we cracked the DNA code, we'd understand humans. And all we've done is create this incredible mystery and wonder about it. And that's where it's extraordinary, is it not?
Beautiful. I think it's just fascinating. And I think
And that kelp, that kelp on the ocean is so complex and so perfect.
Yeah, and so simple. And just, and the beauty of that, you know, Bruce Lee said, be like water. And this, I've had this fascination with water since I was extremely young. And I've actually had the privilege of working with a guy named Ian Trousdor, who owns an international company called Flowform International, and they design biomimicry water features, which actually restructure water, which brings me to a whole other thing, but I won't go there. But fun, just I just get fascinated by anything that can help us resonate at a higher, you know, at a higher level, make us or help us open up our capacity of thought and well-being. The thing that's really interesting is if we assume Occam's razor and we shed, you know, kind of cut away the extraneous, the one thing I've noticed more and more, and certainly over the last 4 years politically, watching politics, watching the dramas and everything, is that one strategy that is very useful is that, you know, when we look at the galaxy, why would it be that, as it seems infinite going out, why would it not be infinite going in?
Yes.
And so the query is, well, if I'm looking out and I'm seeing sadness and unhappiness, and why would it not be that that's what I'm experiencing internally? If that's my fundamental kind of experience of, you know, hatred or fear or anxiety or whatever in that world outside, why would it be any different on my internal? Because, you know, the mirror is constantly running. You know, you hear these stories about people who, you know, why do I always attract the same kind of person into my life? Well, it's because I'm resonating with the thing that I need to resolve, and I attract that or manifest or can only filter to see that kind of person that's going to be my opportunity to resolve this internal conflict or problem that I have internally, you know. And, you know, and when I look at the dramas around the world, I'm going, well, what is that? What if I find myself being drawn into that, I then ask, well, what is the emotion that I need to resolve internally? What is the emotion that is making me focus on that external thing? It's kind of the mirror.
Where does that concept we have of the subconscious fit into this?
That's such a great question. I guess, you know, that...
You just say that. It's a great question. Yeah. What's the answer like?
The answer is you know, I look at it like the ocean. You're standing on a pier, and you're looking out over the ocean, and you look down. And let's say you're standing on one of those piers in very deep water, and you're looking down, and you can see maybe an inch or two under the water, but you know that gradually it's getting deeper and deeper and darker. And it's kind of like the mind or our capacity for awareness or thought, or where we kind of drop our memories and thoughts and feelings, is kind of like that deeper ocean. And what the consciousness is that surface area. So when you go to the tropics, you can be looking down, you're very relaxed, it's like the sun's shining, you know, you're wearing your Hawaiian shirt and your shorts, and you're looking down from the pier, and you can see right to the bottom. It's because you're deeply relaxed. You're deeply in sync. You're just feeling like there's not a bother. But if suddenly there's a storm in your life, or there's a storm, everything gets churned up, the stress is high, the tension is high, then suddenly I can't see below the surface. And so I'm completely drawn, influenced by the surface waves that are constantly battering around me and on me. So it's kind of like that. The mind doesn't have an unconscious as such. It's not like there's a, you know, a kind of like, okay, well, let's open up that door and go into the unconscious. It's more like there's just layers and layers of awareness and consciousness that go deeper and deeper. There is this part of the mind which is actually infused into the every cell of this of the body, as I understand it, is that where we park our fundamental memories, like our personality, how to drive a car, those sorts of things. So the way to answer that question really simply is like, well, when you drive, you're conscious of certain things while you're driving, and yet you're doing 100 million things that you're not aware of, and suddenly you're at the supermarket and you're buying milk. That's all of those patterns, processes, memories, triggers, anchors, all of those sorts of things are all operating, and they're your unconscious processes.
And a car, you're conscious that, oh, that person. A car unexpectedly pulls out in front of you.
Yep.
You're driving in almost a trance because it's so automatic what you do.
It's called the everyday trance, actually.
Yeah, okay. And then that car pulls out. Instantly you're aware and you bring your car to a stop and you think, wow, I wasn't even aware that I did all that.
Yep.
And when you're teaching someone to drive, they can't do any of that. I'm just looking on your webpage, Aaron, and you've got...
My shockingly simple blogger website.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
This morning, thinking about your speech and Elizabeth's speech, I've heard a lot of oratory. But that doesn't make a great speech. It's actually content. And that's why yours and Elizabeth Cave's speeches were so wonderful to me. And actually, you didn't let the oratory get in the way of the content. Because politicians can do great oratory and they end and you think, what did they say?
Yeah.
But they moved you, but you're not quite sure where. And your webpage is quite similar. Because it's fascinating, but as you say, simple. But that's not a problem. But you've got three books here that you've written, and you've written a book that caught my eye called The Rapid Inspired Change Book.
Yeah.
And it looks quite wonderful. And the Australian Hypnotherapy Association book review said this, which is pretty big praise.
I was asked by them, gosh, it'd be over 10 years ago. They actually paid for me. It was fantastic. I travelled to Sydney, Melbourne, Perth, and did a whole bunch of workshops on curiosity and what was the other thing? What's that? It's kind of like the Harry Potter thing. There's this thing that these stories are built on. I can't remember.
Stom.
No, it's kind of, you know, a person hits, you know, is supposed to be a wizard, but they question themselves constantly and rites of passage almost, you know. And then they suddenly, yeah, and they hit all of these stone walls and blah, 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 and then suddenly, boom, they suddenly come to terms with the fact that this is what they really should be doing. And I can't remember, something like a rites of passage or something. But I gave a whole talk on that as well. It's a long time ago. But yeah, so read on.
They say
I can't remember what they wrote.
They say the secret, which I just brought up because I'm reading it.
Yeah.
And the secret for listeners, many listeners will read it, sold 30 million copies, would you believe, is about how deep within all these meditation and religions is this idea of awareness, which is not just body, not just brain, but this awareness, which I took to be similar to curiosity, but Aaron's been correcting me quite rightly. So they say this is the Australian Hypnotherapy Association. The secret says, the book, that if we do what it takes to make us feel good, we'll attract more of what it takes to feel good. This is a great concept. The fascination principle, oh, I'm actually reading the next book, sorry. The fascination principle gives me something concrete. I can do it any moment of any day to take my mind away from thinking thoughts that make me feel bad. So I can concentrate on thinking about what makes me feel good. That's by Kate Kippenberger, author of Soul Food.
Great book.
Sorry, that's the fascination principle. I realize it's sitting
there. The Rapid Inspired Change is the rewrite of the fascination principle. The fascination principle was my first book, which I published through a company in 2001. And then I rewrote it as rapid inspired change. I think 2010, 11, something like that. I can't remember exactly. Actually, I've got it right here in front of me. Should know. 2008. Yeah, I wrote that in 2008. And then Better Sleep Sooner, which we've got here, that was 2011.
Well, I'm going to read it because it's $10 as an ebook. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, fantastic. I hope it works. If it doesn't, if PayPal doesn't work, you know, but it should do.
Aaron's got me on Zoom, so he can see me. And I have to say the Zoom's set up in a rather unflattering way. So you can see that I carry a little bit of weight. And I've struggled with it my whole life. And I can get slim, but then it just comes back. And funnily enough, it's a person who follows us said, oh, look, I'm developing this thing that can help you. Oh, look, I said, I know what to do. I know how to lose weight, but, you know, it's just, and I get depressed.
That's it there. I'm going to stop you right there because I'm watching you, Rodney, and I'm watching what's happening in your body. Do you mind if I just butt
Absolutely.
In? So I learned this a long time ago, and it's been just, it once again, it's Occam's razor, but it's just, because I've been doing this quite a while now, I just, when I'm in a situation like this, because I do a lot of work on Zoom with people, you know, all over. And so, you know, I'm acutely watching every single thing that happens. So the thing that I learned a long time ago, which has been very useful, is this. And I might have to repeat it. The emotion I am feeling about the problem or apparent problem I have will invariably be the emotion that I use unconsciously to generate the problem I have.
So exactly.
Feeling, yeah. So
that's
so
what she's telling me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go.
It's not about dieting or exercise.
No, never is.
It's just, well, she calls it your subconscious and reprogramming your subconscious.
Yeah.
Is that the sort of way you would see it, or is that some, it's probably been simple with me.
No, it's no, and I think spot on, I think.
And do you know what's funny? She has me saying this affirmation, and already I feel lighter and better.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's your affirmation right there. Already I feel lighter and better.
Yes.
Sorry, but there's your affirmation right there. I mean, that's a beautiful affirmation.
And like I'm not even, and I'm just, and I notice I'm eating better. But if you got this depressed or this something in your subconscious, and you saw me slump, didn't you?
I did, because what you're doing is you're kind of imagining going through
the pain.
The pain. Yeah.
Not eating is painful.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I do the intermittent fasting, and I have done for quite some time now. I do the cold shower every morning, all that sort of stuff, and I actually really like that tension that it creates.
But you got to that place.
Yeah.
And I've been at that place and I loved myself. But then I stopped doing it, say, for a week, then a month, then a year, and then you're back. And then, oh, you should have a cold shower. Oh, yeah, I used to do that. Oh, you should intermittently fast. Yeah, I used to do that. Oh, you should try keto for a month. Yeah, I used to do that. But it's, and.
That's it there. What's that emotion?
I don't know. I don't know.
If you did know, guess. If you did know, like make it up, and you'll probably be right. Like if you were to guess, what is this? When I go, oh, what's that emotion?
When I have to.
I mean, sorry. This is public and we're online.
No, 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 mate.
You know, this is.
I'm so old. I'm beyond being humiliated.
Well, it's not so much that. Yeah, yeah, but
I'm beyond being humiliated. So, but what
we're not doing therapy, though, all right?
No,
just make sure not.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's just what you're coming up with, this curiosity sort of cut into me. You're saying, what is it? Oh, here's the thing. And this is where I realized my whole life I've been going wrong. Oh, I've got another one for you, which I've already shared with listeners in an embarrassing interlude. To lose weight and to get healthy, I find, requires 6 months, 8 months of willpower. And when I say willpower, I'm meaning every second, every minute, every hour of every day. I can't in my life have anything else other than that in my head. I've done it 3 or 4 times in my life. I have to block everything out and upend my life. I'll literally go to bed and be thinking, don't eat, willpower.
It's like, don't think of a black cat, don't think of a white cat. It's like, seriously,
that's losing, right? And I realize this now. I'm nearly
what do you want? I mean, the question is, Ronnie, sorry to interrupt, but what do you actually want? Here's the game. Like, if we're doing coaching.
Well, that's what she's done for me.
Yeah, the most paramount question is, what do you want and how will you know you're there? And what does that look like? What does that smell, taste, feel like? What's different about waking up in the morning when you're there? All that sort of stuff. And it's kind of like, you know, goal setting in a way, but it's more about, well, can I picture myself in the state I want to be? And what is so compelling and different and engaging and inspirational about that outcome that becomes the driver, not the pain? You know, the people who survived these horrific situations, you know, which we read about all the time, when you ask them what got you through, it wasn't, don't feel the pain.
Yes.
It was like, I'm going to see my what? I mean, marathon runners, for the love of God, marathon runners, do you actually honestly, and please, if there's marathon runners who do it this way, congratulations, but seriously, do you imagine yourself in the, you know, it's, what is it, 40 miles or 42 miles or something. Do you imagine yourself, at, you know, getting really motivated by picturing yourself at the 30th mile? You know, I don't think so, you know.
How interesting. Oh, my goodness. You know? I feel as though we're cutting the listeners out and it's no fun for them because you and I are having this sort of, you're helping me online.
Yeah, their mirror neurons are switching on, though, Rodney. Their mirror neurons are switching on.
Getting good feedback on the text. Tell me, I've got a funny story about that marathon thing.
Okay, yeah.
At one stage, I was very healthy, and someone decided that I should take up ocean swimming. Mm. And I trained a little bit, and I was very slow. I'd get last, but I could swim 2.8 kilometres in these ocean swims. And I was like the celebrity swimmer that would sort of draw attention to it, one of them. And I'd get out of the water, Aaron, and I couldn't move for 2 days. I just have to go from seat to seat. I was so exhausted. Anyway, I was down here in Queenstown on holiday, where I used to come, and one of my friends said, oh, we're going to do a thing. You should join us. We're going to swim across Lake Wakata.
Wow.
And it was 5 kilometres. And I always say yes. So I said, sure, I'll do that. And then I went to bed that night and I thought, I've never swum 5 kilometres ever. And I struggled to swim 2.8. This is going to be a problem because I can't train between there and then. And I must have picked up something of just what you're saying because I thought, I'm just going to change my head. Because when I'm swimming, I keep saying to myself, am I there yet? Have I made that buoy? How much longer? Am I going to make it? And what I did the next morning, they had a wee outboard to stop me from drowning if I couldn't make it. I started swimming and I just said to myself the whole way, how great is this?
Nailed it.
How fantastic. I'm in Lake Wakata and I'm swimming across it. I never want this to end. Because funnily enough, it's true. I've never done it. But I'll never do this again. I'll never have the opportunity. I don't want this to end. I want to just enjoy it. It's amazing. I found out later, when I got halfway, the men I was swimming with were having breakfast at the cafe at the lake edge, and I was halfway. When I did get to the beach, I was so high, I wanted to swim back.
I've never forgotten
that.
Yeah. And you're not supposed to forget that. That is such an amazing story. And what I want to, just because I'm not aware how long we're speaking for, I'm just aware of the time. There's something that comes up.
Yeah, I just. We do. All we've done is fear about. Do you help me? Yeah. Oh my goodness.
So the thing that comes to mind here is one thing that is often forgotten is the power of positive memory. And what you've had is what you'd probably call an epiphany or some kind of higher level consciousness experience, you know, an aha experience, where you suddenly transcend the pain, you transcend everything, and you're exploring a different state of consciousness, a higher state of consciousness. And your body has explored the opposite, and now it realizes that it can transcend it and have this experience with you. So suddenly you're feeling so engaged, so empowered. Now, imagine if you could tap into that every day. Oh. Imagine if, you know, you get up in the morning, you're going, okay, well, I've got, you know, you're a salesperson, you've got, well, I've got these salespeople and I've got to sell a certain bunch of units a day or whatever. And so what I do is I tap into that memory, you know, and because everyone has, even down to getting your balance on a bike. I mean, if they, you know, when they study the number of neurons that suddenly kick into place, the explosion of neural capacity in your brain when you get your balance on a bike is off the charts. I mean, and we just take this stuff for granted. When you get the clutch and the accelerator right, yes, and a stick shift, you know, and you smile, you know, that
and you never forget.
Surprise.
You never forget
because you can't. And that's how we're wired. Whereas they have to keep repeatedly telling us that the world's coming to an end and everyone hates each other and everyone's out to get you and all. They have to keep repeating it because that's the only way it stays in our consciousness, because we're not driven for that. We're driven for the getting our balance. We're driven for, oh my God, I got to the other side of swam 5Ks. I feel elated. I want to go back.
Yeah.
That's what we're living for. Yeah. And we don't have to have that repeated, because once you have it, man, you can't go back. However, what we can do is we can build a bridge to it daily. We can say, man, you know, I remember when I got to the end of that thing and there was this delight, there's this surprise. Wow. And you go back, you remember it, you close your eyes, you imagine being there fully associated. And in that moment, you're associating into that in your present now. Then what you do is you imagine throwing that out into your future and saying, well, I just want more of that, you know. Wouldn't you?
You can't do it with willpower.
No.
So what you're saying, in my mind, but you've probably got I've only got a half-baked view of it, it's like rewiring your subconscious.
Absolutely.
I'm just got to look at myself. I just like you so much, Aaron. I'm just so, and I mean, I've got to tell the one that I did. This is a terrible admission, but like I'm beyond humiliation. I have always bitten my nails.
Yeah.
Forever. I haven't stopped biting my nails for 2 days. Right? And it's terribly embarrassing, and I hate myself for it. And
there's your emotion. There's your emotion right there.
Yes. And because you think, how stupid is this?
Yeah. No, it's not.
But, you know, I'm telling you. Right,
yeah.
I was a politician, right? And I'd have to hide my hands because they're all chewed. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
My little girl started biting hers.
Mm. She's got a good mentor, mate.
Yes, this affected me so deeply.
I bet.
And I said, Grace, we're not going to bite our nails, but we're going to need help. And she and I prayed, and we asked for strength out loud and together. We have never bitten our nails since. I don't know. I can't remember whether I'm 67 or 68. I've never bitten them enough. I can't believe it. They look great.
They do.
Held them up. And you get dirt under them when they're long. That is that rewiring.
So you brought an incredible amount of your faith.
And I couldn't belief. I couldn't let Jesus down.
Yeah, well, that's huge.
It's huge. And I couldn't let my little daughter down.
Yeah. So what you've done there is you've talked about, and would it be right to say, and I'm just checking in, but in the back of your mind, would there have been, when you sat down to pray with her, would there have been a sense of what the outcome is? And that is a sense that, that's a huge driver. So
my daughter,
my
daughter is not going to suffer like I have suffered.
Yeah. When she's not suffering, Rodney, what is she doing instead?
Enjoying life.
There you go. And what do her nails look like when she's enjoying life?
I know.
Yeah.
I tell you what, would you mind, Aaron, because there's so much to talk about with you, I'm going to read your book. Would you come back and discuss it with me?
Yeah, I'd love to. That'd be awesome.
I've got to read you a great text. Hi, have new phone. Checking. This is your number. Please reply. Ta mum. X.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thanks, mum.
I got a few things. Someone wants to know if there's a vax to stop you getting Legionnaire's disease. Listening to you and Aaron this morning in the Adams, I'm always reminded that if your absolute foundation is not perfect and correct, anything you establish on that foundation will automatically be incorrect and flawed. And Rodney, you should stop shoulding on yourself, love Sally. I should.
Shoulding on yourself.
What's that mean?
It means I should. Oh. So you're shoulding all over yourself. Yeah.
Ah, how wonderful. Yeah. I get that. Thank you, Sally.
Yeah, it's a good
thing. You'll come back, Aaron?
Oh, love to. I hope, see what the feedback is. I love it. I can talk for hours on this stuff, Rodney.
Well, I'm going to read your book so I can tease out in a more directed way, because I was jumping around with where I'm at, and your book is going to help me. And I felt when you spoke, and I heard you in Voices for Freedom, you just spoke to me so deeply, and we haven't got on to what you've overcome. Poison should be dead. Poisoned. And of all the people that should have a miserable outlook on life, because you were poisoned, and here you are bouncing off the walls, judo black belt,
pretty much,
and healthy, positive person.
Yeah.
You've got to share that with us, Aaron. I've been talking with Aaron McLaughlin. You can see his webpage. It's Aaron M. .co.nz. I'm going to get his book. I'm going to read it. I'm going to have Aaron back, because I think this mindset is important to us. It's particularly important, Aaron, because we see a lot of darkness around us. Mm. And I particularly see a lot of darkness around my children, which is very hurtful. Mm. And you need to see it and keep the positive mindset.
There's a great book, and it's called Power Versus Force by David R. Hawkins. And he's kind of he's the go-to for kind of kinesiology research. I don't know if you heard, talk to anyone about kinesiology, but it's fundamentally the body knows what it's doing. But they've done this study in the book, and it's basically measuring the difference between a positive and a negative thought, literally in watts, right? Now, I'm not going to get the numbers right, but the difference in wattage between a positive thought is 10 to the 100 times stronger than a negative thought, like literally. So just by bringing we acknowledge the darkness. So, wow, there's the darkness. How can that now mean I'm even more inspired to bring my love to this moment? You know, it's called quantum linguistics in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. It's where we flip the meaning just through linguistics. So if I say to you, That darkness that you see around your daughters now means you are even more inspired to know what's right for you and your daughters. Is there any conflict from you when I say that to you?
None.
So your brain goes, wow, that makes sense. It's what's called a this means that. The sky is blue means it's going to be a great day. Sky is grey, bad day. Your brain goes, right, Eva, okay. And that's what they did, you know, this means that. So what we do is we want to take it to the deeper level. How can this? And then we open up our minds to that possibility of like, well, what will it be like without that darkness? What will it be like in lightness, in joy, in, as Jesus would have said, you know, that light, you know, peel back the bark, I am there. That's, you know, that kind of that beautiful lightness of being, that connected to nature, God, resonance, you know, all of the, you know, I always think of a bumblebee smashing into a flower. You know, everyone says that thing should not fly. It should not fly. And there it is bouncing off everything. And suddenly its ass is poking out of a beautiful flower, you know, and it's going, yeah, man, I'm into this. And then suddenly it backs out, beep, beep, beep. And then it's off again, bouncing off everything else. I mean, seriously, if you don't find wonder in that, that's the light. That's the joy. That's creation. How wonderful. Nature.
Aaron, I'll read your book, and it's called, where's it going to do? And the book is called?
Rapid Inspired Change.
Rapid Inspired Change, and that's what I'm trying to do. And I've got a friend helping me. She's trying out her system, which is very much what you're talking about. And I'll read the book, and we'll have you back, because everyone is dealing with this darkness out in the outside world, and we've all got, no matter who you are, there's still, you have negative thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And you can help us. Aaron McLaughlin, you never disappoint. I feel as though there's so much to cover that we just can't do it in an hour. It's crazy, right? And I probably talk too much. Aaron, have a great day.
Probably. I just want to say thank you so much for what you're doing. Thank you so much for that beautiful feedback you gave me on my talk.
Oh, that talk.
And these things. And I just so appreciate what you're doing as part of the team at RCR. It's just absolutely awesome work. So, you know, just any time, I'm there for you, mate.
Oh, what a guy. What a guy. There we go. That was Aaron McLaughlin.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.